Your talents are wasted.
I think definitely.
Anyway,
that's about 25 minutes worth of ranting about stuff that's not even going on the pod. So.
I'm not a fan of ginger beer or anything like that, but it's good stuff. Like,
you're not a fan of? Who told you that?
Me. I'm the only person that's not.
You've got a right hard on about not having this logo, haven't you?
Your sound was really, really bad there. That I could hear it was like a sort of, you were a robot for a minute there.
A robot.
It was like speaking to a Dalek.
A Dalek. That is the same as a Dalek.
It's just that it's very, you're sort of coming in and out slightly.
Right, I'm coming in and out.
Too late for that. Your wife's probably expecting the next 2 weeks.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the next episode of the Are You Ready podcast. As ever, I'm your host Derek, and with me is my co-host Dave.
Good evening, Derek. Yeah, it's just me that you've got tonight. I know we've had our guest on for the last sort of few weeks, but it's just back to me and you this week.
Yes, my mates did have a wee rib at me for not inviting them on the podcast, and when I did, there was no takers, so, you know.
They shite in their cell, Derek.
I think they must have been, aye.
Ah, what can we say? It only takes a certain type of people that can come onto a podcast, and that's it. It's just, or it's just folk that talk crap like me and you.
Well, they talk enough crap as well, so I'll get pelted for this probably.
You are good.
Yes, just me and Dave tonight, and we've only got one game to cover because we managed to get the pod out last week as well. So we'll get into that now, and we will go down the tunnel and onto the pitch.
Yes.
First time. Right, the game in question was Sunday the 18th of February. It was away to Hamilton, and it was a very dramatic 5-3 win, wasn't it?
It was very dramatic, Derek. It was one of the games that if you blinked, you would miss something sort of major happening in the match. A great game to watch for the neutral. A great game to watch if you liked attacking football, but a bit of a nightmare if you are a connoisseur of defensive football, shall we say.
Exactly. I think it got to the stage in the first half, it was whoever had the least pish defence won, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. There was a lot of sort of, I think the phrase that I used for you was sort of Keystone Cop type defending, and that was on both sides. Thankfully, Hamilton were a lot worse than what we are, but taking nothing away from our attacking play, some of it was breathtaking and a joy to watch, but I'll let you get into that, yeah. Derek.
I think 5-3 as well, I think maybe flatters Hamilton as well. It made this game sound a lot closer than it actually was. So
yeah, I know.
Anyway, we lined up Fotheringham, Tavernier, Bates, Martin, John, Goss, Doherty, Windass, Candias, Murphy, and Morelos. I tried to say Candias there, and it never really worked. I'm just going to stick to Candias.
Right, okay.
On the subs bench, we had Kelly, Hodgson, Cardoso, Herrera, Halliday, Cummings, and Miller. So it's fair to say, I think maybe the first 7, 8, 9 minutes were absolutely abysmal for Rangers, wasn't it? It was one of those things where, once again, they needed a can of Lucozade, a can of Red Bull, I don't know, some cocaine or speed or something like that to get them started.
Oh no, that was the rumour with a certain player that's no longer playing for us, Derek, so we'll not get into that now.
Who was that?
Well, the one that's away back over to Mexico. Remember, we had a lot of obsessed fans of the green and grey persuasion that were saying that it was all the money was to do with sort of drug cartels and things like that. So, yes. No, we'll stick to the Lucozade and Red Bull, I think.
Yep. In the second minute, Templeton had a good ball into the box for a Hamilton attacker, crossed in and knocked out for a corner. 3 minutes later, Hamilton went 1-0 up. It was a really pish clearance from John. The ball bobbled, half-hearted tackle in the box, comes out to the Hamilton player, place shot in the bottom left-hand corner and past the keeper. Can't take it away, there was a fairly decent shot. Fodderingham, I thought, also could have done a wee bit better with it, but it was really just overall really, really half-hearted stuff, and I think I sent you a message saying the exact same.
Yeah, I loved your expert analysis there, Derek. A really pish clearance.
There's no other way you could do it.
No, it was poor, and it was pretty amateurish. And considering how well that we've been speaking about the defence recently, it did look really, really poor by their point, and disappointing to go a goal behind. But at the same time, Derek, it was so early in the game. I think we all knew that we had enough in our locker to come out and, you know, still win the match. So at that point, I really wasn't worried, just more disappointed than anything else.
Yep. On the 8th minute, we got a cross in from the right-hand side and Morelos had a header off the bar. And again, I think we said in the last game, it was a case of, you know, we hit the bar, we hit shots and we couldn't score. And you kind of thought, well, we're going to go down, hitting off the bar early on in the game. You thought, oh, here we go. Is it one of these games? But fortunately, it wasn't to be, because a minute later, we did draw level.
Yep.
And it was Murphy that got the goal. Candias flicked the ball to Morelos on the right-hand side. Good takedown. A bit of fortune keeping the ball in, because I think it hit off the Hamilton defender's legs as well. But he got the ball to the touchline, cuts it back to Murphy with some great vision. He was waiting free in the box, and more or less a simple tap-in, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. To be fair to Morelos, Derek, there was a wee sort of lucky bounce, but his persistence up front, I think, is fantastic, and his whole upper body strength that he uses as well, just to sort of barge past players and things like that. And then it was a great wee flick back in the awareness, knowing that Murphy was running in. Him and Murphy, I think, were really good, and obviously you'll get on to Windass, but I thought early on anyway, I thought this was going to be Murphy's game, because he really did look bright and, as I say, great awareness by Morelos, and, you know, simple tapping in the end.
Yep. And as you mentioned, Windass there, he got his first goal on the 18th minute. We were kind of largely dominating the play, nothing too major to write home about, but we, you know, largely controlled the game. And as I said, Windass scored in the 18th minute. He got the ball on the left-hand side of the box, and he cut inside, and then he faked to go back outside, but he turned back in again. It was a great piece of skill, actually, to outfox the player. He hit a shot from the edge of the box, and I wouldn't even say it was a hard shot as well. It was right at the keeper, but the keeper couldn't hold it and kind of spilled it by kind of pushing it up and back into his own net. So,
yeah,
bit of fortune, but certainly it was a good piece of skill initially, and, you know, you could argue very good vision to at least, you know, attempt it by Windass as well. And just desserts, what we've been saying all along for the last couple of years, just hit the bloody shot.
Yeah, I know. It was very poor by the goalkeeper, but at the same time, you've got to have these shots, and, you know, Windass is really, his confidence is sky high now, so why not go for it? And he did, and it paid off. But I think the message that I sent you was, when the hell did Hamilton sign Steve Simonson?
It's a wee bit harsh, isn't it?
I don't know, can you remember him playing for us?
No, really, no. Anyway, 4 minutes later, the hard work was all undone again by another piece of really crap defending. I think it was Martin who tried to pass the ball out of the box, and it never really went anywhere. The ball came to Templeton eventually, and he'd done a great turn on the edge of the box, and it was, again, can't take that away from him, it was a fantastic shot past Fodderingham. Again, something Fodderingham maybe should have done a wee bit better on, but you can't really argue with the skill and vision of Templeton there. And as somebody in one of the other podcasts said, that, you know, certainly isn't the artificial pitches that, you know, doesn't make Templeton play, was it?
Exactly. I mean, Derek, any of our listeners from sort of 4 years ago, three, 4 years ago, you know, remember how we used to go on about Templeton. We all know that he's got it in his locker. He's certainly been playing well for Hamilton. He's scored a lot of goals for them. A good bit of skill, but as you say, we're maybe, you know, the way that Wes Fordringham's been playing this season, we're maybe looking for a wee bit more from him in situations like that. We know him as being a fantastic shot stopper. Well, there you go. He can't have the excuse that he didn't, you know, he didn't have enough time to see it because of the distance that the ball was hit. So, no taking it in a way, but a wee bit disappointed that Wes didn't get a hand to that. So, but yeah. One of these things, yeah.
I know that it was raining, I think, at some point during the game, and there were water on the pitch, which I don't know if that, I know that, you know, tries to free up the play of artificial pitches a wee bit more, so I don't know if that had anything to do with both the goals, with the fact that the shots were hit from distance at a wee bit of pace, and the kind of bounce of it just maybe outfoxed them. But again, as a top class keeper, you need to be more aware of these type of things. So
yeah.
Anyway, we did redeem ourselves 4 minutes after that with Morelos getting the goal, and we went 3-2. It was worked down the right by Doherty, squared into the middle to Morelos. He then left it to Murphy, who had a shot, saved by the keeper, out to Murphy again, and very unselfishly and superb vision, clipped it back into the middle for Morelos, who shoots it home. Once again, fantastic vision from our players to find the free attacker in the box.
Yeah, it was great, and it was sort of a role reversal of the first goal that we scored this time. It was Murphy flicking the ball back into the box for Morelos to come in, and a great awareness again by Morelos. Doesn't miss for there. As you say, it was outstanding, and I think just the fact that our players were now starting to find a wee bit of freedom, Derek, and find that space. We knew that we were going to be going on to score a couple more, and it's a great feeling, I think, even as fans, knowing that we are confident that we're going to score a few more. And I think at that point I had a feeling that we were going to get a couple more after that.
Yep. Quieting down for the next maybe 8 or 9 minutes, and then on the 34th minute we got a goal, and quite possibly the pick of the bunch.
Yeah.
And it was Josh Windass that scored it. Lovely one-touch passing all the way up the park from our box. 1-2 touch passing all the way, ending with a Murphy back heel in the box to Windass with a one-touch shot into the back of the net. Shades of the goal we scored against Borussia Dortmund all those years ago.
Yeah, no quite as many passes. No. I think I counted maybe 9 at that point, Derek, but absolutely sensational stuff. I mean, when have we seen us score a goal like that in the last sort of 4 or 5 years? Absolutely brilliant play. I don't care who the opposition are. That was absolutely fantastic, and a great finish by Windass. The guy is just on fire at the moment. I think he's absolutely sensational for us just now, and really, really pleased. And you can see that he is just so confident at the moment. It's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Great link-up play. And then the awareness at the end, getting into the right position, and as you say, one touch, bang, goal, and that's our fourth goal. Absolutely brilliant stuff. Great.
Yep, fantastic. And, you know, just what a flurry. 36 goals in 34 minutes in the first half. You didn't know where to, you know, I couldn't, you know, keep up with typing my notes here just because everything was happening all in a winner. So,
yeah.
Fantastic. And what, as you said at the start, what a game for the neutral as well. But what a game for a Rangers fan or a Hamilton fan. It was a bit mental, wasn't it? So.
Yeah, it was. It was mad, yep.
46 minute, Goss had a free kick from 25 yards, forces a good save from the keeper, comes back out to Morelos, have a shot at angle, but a keeper save. I think he tried a wee bit of an outrageous one there, a tight angle, which, you know, in fairness to him, he's managed to get them in from tight angles before.
Yeah.
But certainly, it's what I like to see, players who are full of confidence having shots and trying outrageous things like that, and that was good to see from the team. And certainly from all our goals, I think, and as I put on Twitter as well, the key thing for me was the vision of the players, especially the attackers, looking up to find men in space, looking up to find where the next pass, putting passes into spaces for players that are going to be in that space because they're running up, which is fantastic to see. And it shows a great awareness and a togetherness with the team, which is something that have been, you know, lacking really the whole first half of the season. Yeah, so into the next half, we're hoping for kind of a bit more drama, a bit more towards our side again. 57th minute, the corner, Kurt comes in, headed out, finds Doherty, who spun and hit a snapshot off the bar, comes to Bates, who tried to place the ball into the bottom corner with his head, but it went just wide. Think if Bates maybe a wee bit more composure from Bates there, and it might have been on target.
I tell you one thing, Derek, we were talking about how good, you know, our third goal was, sorry, our fourth goal that Windass scored. But if Doherty had scored that goal, that would have been one of the goals of the season, because it was a sort of turn of volley. If that had went in, that would have been absolutely sensational. He was unlucky there. Maybe Bates, it's maybe caught him by surprise, maybe for an extra wee sort of half second to, you know, steady himself more. It might have well have ended up in the bottom corner, but just unlucky with that one.
Yep. And the 59th minute, lovely ball down the right-hand side by Tavernier into the path of Windass. He hits a shot. It was well saved by the keeper, but he palmed it out to the defender who conceded the corner. The really only major kind of chance I think Hamilton had this half, and it was our mistake again, it was on the 62nd minute where it was a bad attempted pass back by Murphy roundabout from the halfway line. Ball clearly wasn't long, you know, hit hard enough, or it held up on the Arsenal turf. Hamilton player picked up the ball and he had a shot from distance, but it was saved by Fotheringham.
Yep.
You know, I know Bates, I think it was McCrory, I think, tried something like that, a bad pass back.
Aye, yep.
And we conceded from that. A good number of games ago.
It was McCrory, yeah. It was probably the only criticism that we can have of McCrory since he came in and played for us. And again, maybe the only criticism that we can have of Jamie Murphy, who it was probably his only misplaced pass of the entire game that he had, because I thought he was sensational. So we were just lucky that nothing came of that one.
Yep. And to round out our goal scoring on the 71st minute, Windass got his hat-trick. Fantastic vision by Candias from the throw-in. He did a quick throw-in to find Morelos running in the right-hand side, who looked up, great pass, and then it was a simple tap-in to Windass on the, basically in the box in the middle. Just as I said before, it was all about the vision of the players. They were looking for things, and you know, we got a quick goal from that, which was fantastic to see.
Outstanding, yep.
Yep. 7 minutes later, on the 78th minute, it was a double substitution. Windass and Morelos came off, Miller and Cummings came on. And on the 85th minute, Goss came off and Halliday came on. All the subs really were largely ineffective. You know, the game was done and dusted by that point, and you know, we didn't really do much else after that. And then obviously the moment of controversy on the 86th minute, it was a penalty to Hamilton for a handball in the box. Absolutely, Martin's hand was up. He had his hand up when he slid in to try and get the slide tackle, much like it was basically the exact same as what
it
happened
was.
In a few games ago when a penalty was conceded.
Against, was it Ross County?
I think it was,
aye.
Mm-hmm. And it was really, though, it was a cross or a shot in from 2 yards from him. Where was he meant to put his hand? And the best of it was he got a yellow card for it, which is basically saying that it was a deliberate attempt. If his hand is already up when he's sliding in, how can it be a deliberate attempt to handle the ball?
I know. I was just thinking again, going back to the Ross County game, as you say, before the ball was even struck, he was sliding in to try and block it, and it's, you know, it's came off his hand. It's definitely not an intentional handball. It's definitely not a yellow card. It has hit his hand. So you're sort of running a fine line there, Derek, as to is it a penalty, is it no? But getting away from that, it was certainly another incredibly harsh yellow card that he got for something that he couldn't control.
Yeah, I mean, what I found more astounding is on the Heart and Hand podcast, Cammy, who is a referee as well, said that he didn't do enough to move his hand out of the way. Well, if you're sliding in with the momentum and you've already slid in and your hand is up and somebody hits the ball at pace, how the hell are you meant to get your hand out the way from 2 yards when the ball's coming at you at 30, 60 mile an hour, whatever it is?
Yeah.
I found that incredible for somebody who's a referee to come away with that. Just absolutely baffling. And as you said, the yellow card is definitely not justified.
I sat and I watched the highlights back on Sports Scene, and surprise, surprise, the Michael Stewart said that it was a definite stick-on penalty for Ross County. His hand was up, no mistakes. You know, there was nothing, you know, in there. But I'm in the same camp as you, Derek. There's no way that could be classed as deliberate, in my opinion. No. But
and the best of it was, I never heard it myself, but from what everyone was saying on Twitter, is Andy Walker on Sky Sports commentary came away with, well, had the game been closer, or you know, it would never have been given. So what's he trying to say there? Is that the referees are cheating just to give them a goal because they feel like it. You know, it's either a penalty or not in their eyes.
I know.
But that's Andy Walker for you. Anyway, the Hamilton did convert the penalty on the 87th minute, and it finished up 5-3. So that's why I said it looked a wee bit closer than it actually was. I mean, certainly other than the two goals in the first half that we conceded from really sloppy defending and individual errors, and obviously that error by the pass back from Murphy, we didn't look in really in danger. You know, as soon as we went 2-2, we you know, really upped the gear, and we just, you know, leathered them. I thought we controlled the game. We done everything right.
I think it's great, Derek. We have been for so long this season relying on our two right-sided players to make all the to be our creative players. Jamie Murphy coming in there on the left-hand side, that's been his best game so far. We saw shades of it in the last game against Ayr United, but this game is when Jamie Murphy really came on to his game for us. I think he's going to, you know, I think it's going to click in place for him, and he's going to really go on even further now. I thought he was outstanding. We now have the both wings that are causing problems, Derek. That's what we have been screaming out for, isn't it? We've been speaking about it all season, that we've not had anybody on the left-hand side. It was even when we were getting linked with Jamie Walker, we were saying just even to have somebody out wide left that can play in that position and cause problems. Well, we've got the man now, and we're not having to rely on the one side, and that was the thing. All of our forward players all linked up superbly, and they all seem to have this incredible understanding. You said it there, that the vision of the players were fantastic, and it's now all coming into place. It's just great to see. I'm just a wee bit annoyed that the defence let that in, because in my opinion, I think Bates has been absolutely outstanding in there, and I thought that Martin would be, you know, just a solid pro, you know, a rock in there for him to, you know, learn off. And I was just a bit disappointed how sort of lackadaisical the defence was. Was it just the fact that they've maybe thought, oh, it's Hamilton, they're not very good, we'll win the game regardless because we're playing, you know, so well going forward? Do you think that's what you, just a wee bit complacency possibly?
I'm not sure. I just think it was individual errors that were letting the team down, and I think that's been again the story of our campaign the last couple of years. Right. Just silly individual errors. And
next question for you then. Bruno Alves is back at just about full fitness, so is Cardoso. Does one of them come in? Does he change the defence about, or does he keep the team, does he keep the defence as it is?
As I said in the last podcast, and especially in regards to Alves, you know, he needs to earn his place. Just because he's a big name doesn't mean he's an automatic start, and you know, we're paying a lot of money for him apparently, and but you know,
how do you earn your place though, Derek? How do you earn that if you're not playing? Are you talking about just in training, or, you know, how do you get into that position if, you know, you're not actually getting a game?
It's got to be through training, and it's got to be a bit of luck as well, because you're not going to change, I would like to think anyway, if the defence get a better understanding with each other, you know, and they start to gel and connect and start to play well, then you don't disrupt that by bringing in a player just because he's a big name. Absolutely. See if you come, you know, the Hearts game and the defence are howling, then yeah, I would say absolutely look at, you need to start changing.
Oh no, you've jinxed it now, Derek. That's it. I seen a debate on social media with a couple of Rangers fans, and somebody was saying that he thought unquestionably that the partnership between Alves and Cardoso was a better partnership than Martin and Bates. I didn't see that, to be perfectly honest with you. I think Bates, out of the all four of them, in my opinion, has been the best defender out of the four of them this season that I've seen. He's the one that I think I've been the most impressed with, and he's not played that many games, but either have any of them, to be fair. There's not really been that much time for them all to have a sort of defensive partnership, but at this moment in time, I would feel more confident with the defence that we've got in just now of Martin and Bates rather than Alves and Cardoso. But it's as I say, it's actually for the first time in I don't know how long, Derek, it's an absolutely fantastic problem for the management to have the fact that you've got Cardoso, Alves, and then you look on the bench for Saturday, Kenny Miller, Jason Cummings, all these guys that are, you know, that kind of get into the first team, you know, that are fighting to get in the first team. It's a fantastic problem for us to have, and it's the first time that this has happened to us, so yep. It's superb.
Absolutely. I mean, it's something that we're not here just to service Alves's World Cup dreams. We need to do what's best for us.
Exactly.
So, you know, obviously the gaffer sees these players in training day in, day out, so we need to kind of trust him in this one. I know that there's a lot of people calling for Cardoso to come back in, but, you know, I wouldn't say he set the world alight when he did play. I mean, he was solid enough, but, you know, given the fact that our defence was so chop and changey, you never really got a good partnership going, did you? So.
Again, Derek, and I said this before about Alves, but I'll say it for Cardoso again. If Cardoso in the games that he played had have played the way that David Bates has played, we would be absolutely raving about the guy. Yeah. He would be, you know, the next superstar in all our eyes. That's how well Bates has been playing. So, personally for me, I would stick with the defence that we've got coming into the next games. But going back to Jamie Murphy, I don't know what your thoughts were, Derek. I just thought he was outstanding. Him and Windass, Morelos were outstanding. And Candace, I think, had quite a quiet game by his standards, but that's maybe just because, you know, Murphy played so well. You know, it's taking the pressure off him as well, which is just absolutely brilliant for us.
Yeah, it's certainly been a great signing so far. So I hope it can continue, certainly.
Yep.
Really, in the table, we have played 27 games. We've won 16, lost 7, drawn 4, scored 53, conceded 31, goal difference plus 22, and points 52. Celtic have actually only won 2 more games than us, playing the same amount of games. We're sitting second place to now. We are joint in points against Aberdeen, who are in third, but we're plus 10 goal difference better than them. Celtic are in first place and are 9 points ahead. Obviously, they drew against St Johnstone there. Hibs are in fourth place, 5 points behind. So obviously, with Celtic dropping points, we had a good result there. We're now back in second place. Everybody's saying, right, the title chase is back on. But we've been in this position before this year,
we've
thrown it away. So it's all about consistency. The next game, obviously, to come is on Saturday against Hearts. And then we're playing Tuesday, the 27th of February, away to St Johnstone. That's a 19:45 kickoff. So it's really, you know, as a lot of people have said as well, this Hearts game could be very interesting, because if we win that game, Celtic are playing Aberdeen on the Sunday, which could obviously, we'll be only 6 points behind Celtic going into the Sunday, obviously artificially because of the game in hand, and obviously we'll be 3 points ahead of Aberdeen as well. So mentally it's a big thing for them too, and I don't know what the outcome of that result you would want. Would you want a draw or a Celtic win or an Aberdeen win?
That is a difficult one, Derek, but I think again, if we were confident that we were going to beat Hearts, you know, realistically we would be looking for Aberdeen to get a victory there. But regardless, even, you know, if again, I think we should be forgetting about their games and concentrating on our games. If we win, fantastic. And then we'll, you know, that game can work out the way it is. But the main thing is that we didn't shoot ourselves in the foot here, Derek. This is an opportunity to either cement second place or Celtic get beat, we win for a chance for that gap to close, which is fantastic as well. So it all comes down to us now. It's, you know, it's in our hands. It's been proved already that Celtic are the dominant side that they were last year, and just with some consistency, we could be right up there. We've been saying that for ages. And another thing that somebody had put down that I thought was hilarious was that, you know, Rangers are playing Hearts at their most difficult stadium for them this season, and that's Ibrox. Yeah. Because that's, let's be honest with you, that's where the problems have been. We need to get over this hoodoo of playing, you know, the games at Ibrox and no winning. We need to get the mentality the way that we played Aberdeen there. You know, and we beat them easily, you know, and here's hoping against Hearts that it's exactly the same. Hearts will make it difficult for us because they're a very defensively sound team. They've got their defence set out. He'll play, you know, his banky defenders and his banky midfielders and try and hit us on the break. And there's, to be fair to Hearts, their defence is, you know, better than a lot of the other teams that we play. So it'll be down to how well our front sort of four players all play. But on evidence on Saturday, you know, against Hamilton, Derek, on Sunday, that wasn't the problem for us at all. So just have to hope that they're, you know, on song again and, you know, we go out and put on a really good performance and get the victory.
Yep, and certainly, you know, if we manage to beat Hearts and then it's all up to Celtic, I think, and, you know, I think we've seen from the weekend's comments by Brendan Rodgers after the St Johnstone game that he's really starting to feel the pressure now because some of the comments were a bit outlandish, weren't they?
Well, I think he mentioned Rangers about four times and we weren't even playing them, Derek. So, so that's good though. That's good to see. Just as I keep saying though, we do not want to shoot ourselves in the foot now. We need this momentum to continue. The players are in a total high. Every, you know, confidence is sky high, especially with the likes of Josh Windass. And, you know, here's hope.
Yep. So, with no boardroom section again, I think we're just going to scrap that from now on and amalgamate it into the news section because, you know, not a lot happens there, thankfully.
Great stuff.
So, we're now going into the classic match.
Manchester, brace yourself. Rangers are coming!
So, Dave, what classic match have you got for us this episode?
I am going to go back to 2002, Derek. It was a match not too long into Alec McLeish's tenure as our manager. It was a Scottish Cup tie at Ibrox against Hibs. It was played on the 26th of January 2002. Rangers lined up that day with Kloss in goals, Fernando Rixon, Tony Vidmar, Craig Moore and Lorenzo Amoruso. In midfield, we had Bert Conterman, Barry Ferguson and Ronald De Boer. And up front for Rangers, it was Shota Averladze, Peter Lovenkranz and Tory Andre Flo. Barry Ferguson was the captain there. And Hibs had a few players that I can I remember. I don't know if you remember Ulysses De La Cruz. Remember him, Derek? Grant Brebner, and they had two guys up front who I've got absolutely no idea what country they're from, Luna and Hattardo. Nick Colgan in goals. So a few sort of well-known players there. Frank Sauzet was the manager of Hibs at that point. And referee for the day was Scotland's answer to Colina, and that was John Robotham. Remember him? I think the only thing they had in common was the resemblance of their baldy napper. I think that was about it. But
I think given today's refereeing standards, we'd have and back for bloody John Robotham.
Anyway, straight from kickoff, Rangers went on the attack in the first minute. Fernando Rixon down the right-hand side, a ball over a shot to Averladze. Fantastic shot for the edge of the box, which was deflected out for a corner. From that corner, Fernando Rixon whips the ball in. Lorenzo Amoruso, a powerful header, bang, just over the bar. And then only 5 minutes later, Peter Lovenkranz with another shot for the edge of the box, which was just over the bar, you know, laying siege to the Hibs goal. In the 7th minute, 2 minutes later, Tory Andre Flo with a header for Fernando Rixon cross, but he put it straight into the arms of Nick Colgan. Really should have done better there. And then on the just about 10 minutes later, the 19 minutes to be exact, Ronald De Boer, a fantastic turn and shot at the edge of the box again, just over. Constant pressure, and then on the 23rd minute, we finally managed to break the deadlock.
Just about midway through the first half, Rangers look for a breakthrough. Rixon stepped over by Averladze, and Tory Andre Flo marks his comeback with the opening goal, his 20th goal of the season. Rangers ahead.
Fernando Rixon on the right-hand side with a tremendous low cross, which was dummied by shot at Averladze because he knew that Flo was running behind him. Flo, first-time shot, bang, into the goal to make it 1-0 to Rangers. Now, all this dominance, Hibs suddenly had one single shot at goal, but as you know, usual, Hibs equalised.
Mark Rubner for Tansley. And then De La Cruz, useful header down. Mark Rubner pulls the goal back. Rubner squares the game. That's a great finish.
With a first attack, like I said, just about 5 minutes after that, in the 28th minute, to make it 1-1. And we thought to ourselves, here we go, all this pressure, all these chances, and, you know, that's Hibs back in the game. But we did manage to get ourselves back in front just before half-time on the 44th minute.
Ferguson's pass. And Ron De Boer making a good run. And it's Peter Lonnycroft. 2-1. Right now in half-time. His third goal of the season. Good movement from Lonnycroft here, anticipating what was happening. Ferguson set up De Boer into the danger area from Ronald De Boer, and Colgan was helpless as Lovenkrantz finished it off. 2-1 Rangers.
Barry Ferguson with a high through ball to Ronald De Boer on the left hand side of the box. It was a sort of first time low cross straight to Peter Lovenkrantz. He couldn't miss, bang it and into the back of the net to make it 2-1 to Rangers at half time. So going into the second half on the 50th minute, Tory Andrew Flo this time, a great chance after a ball by Barry Ferguson. He was just about to pull the trigger, some sort of last gasp defending there by the Hibs defenders. And then in the 55th minute, shot of Averladze with a long shot, it was just past the post, unlucky with that one. And then the goal just after that on the 65th minute.
Rickson's delivery this time, Amoruso is there. And Tory Andrew Flo gets his second. And that's the crucial goal. It's the goal which makes it a two-goal margin. It's 3-1 Rangers.
Two corners in a row. Amoruso header falls to Tony Vidmar, then to Tory Andrew Flo, who managed to prod it in, a bit of a goal mouth scramble there, but the big man showing that, you know, he was a bit of a penalty box striker as well, prodded that one in to put Rangers 3-1 ahead. On the 70th minute, Ronald De Boer comes off and Billy Dodds come on. 75th minute, shot to Averladze with another great chance after being played through by Tory Andrew Flo. His shot just clipped wide of the post. Then Averladze with a cross right along the face of the goal. There's no one there to prod it in. And then we rounded off the scoring on the 86th minute.
85 minutes on the clock with Averladze. Now Dodds. And again. Billy Dodds scores his first goal of the season. Back in from the wilderness, and how he enjoyed that.
Cross from the right by Shota Averladze to Billy Dodds, who had a bit of a fresh air kick, completely misses the ball, but the ball sort of spins back to him and he slammed it into the net. He didn't miss it the second time. Score was 4-1, and then one more chance after that, really should have scored. Peter Lovenkrantz with a ferocious shot from the left-hand side of the box and a spectacular save by Nick Colgan to put it out for the corner. Probably about as one-sided a game as you will see. Derek Hibbs, very few chances, and we were really at them right from the beginning. Some great goals, and that got us into the quarter-finals of the Scottish Cup. Some really good day. Footage of the match as well on quite a few of the websites there. So again, if you get the chance to go back and have a look at it, you'll see some fantastic players on show. Ronald De Boer, shot of Averladze, Big Ammo, and of course Barry Ferguson, and Fernando Rickson, who had a spectacular game that game. So give it a wee watch if you get the chance.
Yes, fantastic game. Watching back, good memories as well. And I was quite surprised, though. I was having a look at the game, and you seen the stands, and they looked pretty empty. And yep. I looked at the attendance, only 25,500 folk there.
Yeah, again, Derek, it's the curse of the cup games. You know, Ibrox, there's a lot of people, season ticket holders, that don't take the cup matches, and I don't know if the game was maybe televised as well, but that's been a long-standing issue that we've had with the cup games in the early stages. But, regardless, an outstanding scoreline, and I think if that was just now, and we were playing Hibs in a cup game at Ibrox at the moment, it would probably, you know, it would more than likely be a sellout. So it just shows how the fans are eager for us to get, you know, back, you know, beating teams and being successful again. So,
well, on that note, we are playing Falkirk at home on Sunday the 4th of March in the Scottish Cup quarter final, yep. And I think that's heading towards a sellout. So
fantastic, yeah, superb,
yep,
brilliant.
So, we will now move into the news.
From ITN, the ITV News at 10 with Trevor McDonald.
Right, a few bits and pieces to cover here as ever. First one here is Rossiter has been injured again. This time it's his ankle and not the same knee as we all suspected when the news first broke.
Yeah.
It happened when he was playing for the under-20s out in Spain. Now, regardless if it's not the same injury he's picked up again, is it not maybe of a case that, you know, his body is just too weak to be a footballer?
I don't know, Derek. There's been a few debates on this as well. The guy is, we're paying his wages, and a lot of people have been talking about him. Should we just be cutting our losses and that way? I think we all know again that he could turn out to be a special player, but is it just the guy who's got the worst luck in the world? Or is it the fact that he's just, you know, as you've just said there, is it, you know, he's not cut out for it? Is it maybe a chance that we need to get him back, to try to get him back to full fitness and get him loaned out to somebody to see if he can gain, you know, first team football, maybe a much a lower standard than, you know, he's wanting to play it just to get him playing?
Yeah,
I honestly don't know. The guy just seems to have absolutely no luck whatsoever. Derek, he's, you know, I think personally, you know, he could be an outstanding player for us. But again, it's just we're not getting the chance to see him. And just when we thought he was getting over his injury hell, something else strikes. I don't know. Do you know how serious this ankle injury is, Derek? And
I don't know. I've not heard anything else since the story broke. So
yeah. I know there's the old standing joke with him that he's, you know, 7 to 10 weeks away or whatever, but
days.
Yeah. So I don't know if you know how bad the ankle injury is. I hope it's not bad at all, and he, you know, he does get back playing regularly, but you just have to wait and see. But absolutely no luck for the guy at all. He's going to be absolutely depressed as anything. The fact that he's, you know, this has happened to him, after the long time of him being out and the amount of setbacks he's had.
Aye, I'd be bloody depressed with his bank balance anyway after this.
I know, but I think the whole playing aspect, you would be though, you'd be starting to set yourself, is it ever going to happen for me? So no, I do feel genuinely quite sorry for the guy.
Yeah. Next one here, as we did mention it the last time because the story kind of half broke, but it was confirmed a lot that Tavernier has signed a contract extension which keeps him here until the summer of not 69 but 2021.
Yeah, fantastic, yep.
And Josh Windass has put pen to paper and signed the same extension as well, so he's also here to that same summer.
Excellent. The two of them are absolutely outstanding for us, the now Derek, and getting a lot of interest from clubs down in England. So this now, you know, shows the vast majority of clubs, you know, that they couldn't be snapping them up on the cheap if they were wanting to put any dodgy wee bids in for them. No, just great, and it shows their commitment as well. You know, everything that happened with Windass and the whole shushing the crowd thing, I think this might, you know, quieten a few people down to show that the guy is committed to the club. So no, I'm delighted with that, and as I say, the two of them are playing absolutely fantastic for us at the moment, yeah. So really, really pleased.
I mean, up until maybe I don't know, just before Murty taking over again, I would have said, no, Windass, you know, just get rid of him. I mean, I think most people would have said that because he wasn't playing. He looked, you know, disinterested a lot of the time. But certainly since Murty's came in, he's turned the corner and he's been absolutely fantastic, as you've said. So I've no issues with that. But at the same time, you're only as good as your last game, so he needs to keep this up. And the worst comes to the worst, as you kind of mentioned there. It kind of shores up any fee that they might get for either them that if somebody wanted to come in, given the fact that they're on long contracts now. So
yeah.
Yep. On the note of players going out, Liam Burt has moved to Dumbarton on emergency loan. I think they're a part-time team, so I believe he can still train and play for our under-20s, because I think one of the other players that that went out on emergency loan the last time we mentioned was played for our under-20s as well. So
okay.
Next one here, potential players going out. A confirmed £9 million bid for Morelos has been rejected. And I don't think it was confirmed anywhere, but apparently that there was an £11 million bid put in by the same Chinese team for Morelos as well, which was also turned down. To be honest, I don't know my thoughts on that. I mean, I'm thinking that's an incredible bid to turn down, because as good as he is, he's not an £11 million player, is he?
No, he's not. But in this day and age, Derek, there are far worse players than him going for a hell of a lot more money than that. I think at this moment in time, especially the way he's playing, he's got his confidence back. He's got his scoring touch back as well. I would hate him to leave us at this point in the season. I really would. And I know we've got Jason Cummings, who is, you know, he's got all the confidence in the world and he will be a fantastic player for us, but is he as good as Morelos? I don't think he is. So I am pleased so far that he's still in the team, but who's to say? I mean, I thought we keep getting told that the Chinese transfer market or the window doesn't close until the end of this month. So who's to say that another bid might not come in for him and he, you know, it might be accepted. I don't think we could, and anyone could blame the club for turning down even more money than that for him. But I would be disappointed if he did go, because I think that he could be, you know, score a hell of a lot of goals for us this season. And well, again, it's one of these have to wait and see things. You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't.
I think it's one of these things that's even I would have sold them at £8 million, to be honest, because certainly when it's getting up to the £11 million, that covers all the expenditure of players over the summer. It covers anything that of players that have came in during the winter there, and it would also cover signing the likes of Cummins permanently as well, and potentially having money left over. So It's you know, when you're getting to ridiculous kind of money, certainly for ridiculous for Scottish football terms, you know, it's you kind of need to say, you know, is it really worth it? You maybe need to just take it, because you might never get offered that again. But as you said, it's a wait and see thing what happens.
And it's in the fact, I mean, he's even there's even been talk of him possibly being included in, you know, Colombia's next international friendly match, because he's scoring that many goals and he is playing in Europe. So, you know, if we could hold on to him and he even was to be put in the squad, Derek, that is going to put his value up even more, in my opinion. But maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just, you know, he's been the first sort of class striker that we've had in the team for a long time. I know he's still, you know, really sort of raw, and he's not the finished article, but I would be heartbroken if he was to leave us, to be perfectly honest with you. But again, it's if you're getting offered silly money, you've really got to consider it. So I don't know.
Still talking about Morelos, he has now became into the top 10 Colombian goal scorers in European football of all time.
Yep.
He's got a running tally then out of 62 goals. He's some way to go, however, to get to the top of that list, because Falco of Monaco.
Yep.
Is on 213 goals just now. So,
all right, okay,
yeah, but good for him anyway.
Yep, no, excellent.
Next one here is obviously we're getting to the stage now, we're talking about the post-split fixtures, and if the top six ends the way it's as it stands just now, we've already played the other five teams twice at Ibrox. So it means two of the teams will need to play us for a third time at Ibrox this year. It's happened every other year in some form or other. I think we've been affected seven times by so far out of the nine times it's happened. And, you know, we've been on the shit end of the stick there. It happens due to the nature of it. You need to kind of get on with it. It's not the most ideal, but you get on with it. Yet some fans have taken to forums and hotlines and all that, basically blaming us, because it's always Rangers' fault, and claiming that the SPFL NFL are favouring us over it. They just.
But I mean, Derek, have these people actually watched us playing at home this season? Let's exactly, be perfectly yeah. honest. So, is it? But being serious though, is it really that much of an advantage the way, because we have played by far our best football away from home this season yeah. by far. So it's really not an advantage. It's great, you know, that you've got your support there cheering them on. But I don't, and I'm being completely serious here, I don't think it's any way an advantage to us playing at home at the moment than it is to playing away. So
no, but it's just another thing that we get blamed for by yeah, other fans. Some of these fans have got a real, real fucking cheek when it comes to that. I expect it from Celtic fans, but see any yep. other fans, you know, they really don't know where their bread's buttered. And I've said that before, you know, yep. if it wasn't for Rangers and the Blue Pound, they would be a non-existent, you know, club now.
Yep.
Getting into some kind of semi-Rangers news here, Alex McLeish has been given the Scotland job.
Yes.
I'm quite happy he's got it. It'll certainly yep. bring a bit of more balance to you know, yeah. team selections rather than a Celtic-minded person picking all the Celtic players all the time. As usual, the Moonhowlers are not happy of it, and they've used every excuse under the sun to give reasons why they don't want him there, including the fact they had an EBT. What the fuck has that got to do with managing the fucking, you know, Scottish national team?
Exactly. No, I'm pleased he got it, Derek. He's an experienced manager. He's getting, I'm not saying he's old, but he's getting older now, you know, so international football, I think, will suit him better than club management. He's certainly got more experience now. He's managed, you know, other clubs down in England as well as in Europe. So no, he's we're not exactly you know, flush with international manager sort of class people out there. So it was probably the, you know, I know they were wanting to get Michael O'Neill, but that turned into a bit of a farce. So no, go for the safe hands. I think he'll do a good job. He was certainly done well for Scotland the last time. So, and as you say, I think a bit more you know, balanced to the players that are getting picked and players that are not getting picked. So no, I'm the same as you. I'm pleased with that one.
I just find it funny that a lot of the fans are blaming him for walking away the last time and going to a club management. I think it was at Birmingham he went to after that.
Yep.
You know, I think they seem to forget that a national manager is a part-time job. You know,
yeah.
You've seen the likes of, I mean, this is how part-time it is. Gareth Southgate, the England manager, was at the Super Bowl and he was talking to managers of American football teams to try and get tips of how to train your players. It's fucking That's two right. different sports. That shows exactly. you how much of a part-time game yep. it is. So if you wanted to go and, you know, go from a national team manager to a full-time paid job, and he done, you know, and regardless of what anyone says, he was successful at Birmingham under a board and a management structure that were very hampering from what we've been told as well. So, well, it's a, as you said, and as I agree, it's a good appointment.
Yep.
Into another former manager now. Cruz Azul fans have been calling for Pedro Caixinha to be sacked already, and he was also sent off in their last game for protesting too much for a player stealing yards at a throw-in.
Right, okay.
Something tells me that I can see Carlos Peña heading back to Ibrox.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Well, we'll wait and see what develops there. I think he's one of the folk that are, you know, hoping that he could be a success back there in Mexico. But obviously, it's no working out for him. So we'll just have to wait and see that one and all.
Yep. Right. Next story here. Man dies after masturbating 62 times straight on Valentine's Day. A 33-year-old single man from Bloemfontein in South Africa died on Wednesday afternoon after he masturbated 62 times in a row. Valentine's Day ended in tragedy for David Mabuza after he apparently masturbated a world record jaw-dropping 62 times non-stop before dying of a heart attack. Mabuza, who lived with his parents, was found dead in his bedroom after apparently masturbating too much. It's speculated that he's suffering from depression due to being extremely lonely on Valentine's Day.
Should that not be David Mabuza? No?
Mabuza, itchy. Mabuza drained.
62 times, Derek.
I'm going to say I don't know where this story's came from. I question its veracity given the fact, how the hell did they know the number of times?
again, I'm not going to question your sources here, Derek. Not at all.
Officer Ronnie McKeezy told Noosa reporters that what they saw when they opened David's bedroom door. The young man was on his bed. His penis was detached from his body. It must have been so intense it just came off his body. He found his penis gripped around his left hand so tightly we couldn't get it out. It was tragic.
I thought you were going to say that when the police opened the door there was a tidal wave. So he'd basically chugged that hard that he'd pulled his willy off. Is that what you're trying to say?
Literally and figuratively there.
Oh, dearie dear. Does the bear think about, does it?
Thief arrested after stopping to watch adult film while committing burglary. Everyone likes to treat themselves once in a while, but if you're going to take some me time in the middle of a burglary, it's probably not the best time to do it. That's exactly what one thief discovered in LA, California, after he broke into a home business and got arrested because he stopped to watch porn on a computer. The incident, partially captured on a security footage, also showed the man taking a bit of a luxurious time to wander around, smoking a cigarette, charging his phone. No rush or anything. The intruder was caught red-handed, I don't want to know what else was read in that one.
Exactly.
The past Monday night by Lisa and Steve Marizzi, who owned a hair extension business in the neighbourhood and live in an apartment upstairs. It's believed that a man identified as 28-year-old Alan Estrada slipped into the business by climbing through an air vent. Last night, I came downstairs to make some tea and saw him at the computer sitting watching porn, Missouri told local TV station. Lisa screamed after seeing the man, and husband and son came rushing quickly downstairs and confronted the man trying to chase him down. Estrada tried to and failed to escape through a padlocked door before the Missouri's son, Giovanni, decked him, picking up and body slamming him.
I thought you were going to say they came down and she screamed and he turned around and said, "Hold on, it's getting to the good bit."
Surveillance footage taken at the business showed Estrada wiping a large amount of cash. Oh no,
it was wiping sun.
It was actually should have been swiping.
Okay.
So, on that note,
this is at the end.
I can't be arsed reading any of it. I might just cut that one.
I thought it was quite funny, actually.
I might keep there it there.
All right, okay.
So, there's no really where I can take it from there, is there? So, on that note, we will end the podcast.
I think you better, Derek.
Yes. So, as ever, we are on Twitter at iReadyPods. On Facebook is facebook.com/iReadyPod. Our website is iReadyPodcast.wordpress.com. We have our iReadyPod YouTube account, so if you just search for that there, as well as our Instagram account as well.
Yes.
So you've got to say yes.
I didn't know if you were burping there, Derek, or you had lost your breath, or you took a sort of big sharp inhale of breath, so I was waiting on what you were coming out with there.
Big breath and I'm only 16.
Exactly, yes. Yes. The old ones are the best, yes.
So they say. So, it's just to say, thanks for listening, and goodbye.
Yes, take care everyone, and here's hoping for another 3 points on Saturday.
The gas of the Pepsi.